Alright, Peyben, what else we said about the Tudat? We just dealt with the Asarat Takanot, the Shetikin Yoshua. Now we're moving on to the Asarat Takanot, Tikin Ezra. Ezra himself also established 10 Takanot. So here we go. The first one is Korim B'mincha B'Shabbat. It's to be, that's what we have today. We lain as Mincha on Shabbat. Korim B'Sheni B'Chamishi. We lain on Mondays and Thursdays. B'Danin B'Sheni B'Chamishi. They have the Beis Din Sif, and they had the Din on Mondays and Thursdays. Umechabzim b'chamishi b'Shabbat. They laundered on the Thursday. V'chulim shum b'erev Shabbat. Then Friday to eat garlic. V'shtei isha mashkemet v'ofa. That a woman should get up early and bake. V'shtei isha chogeret b'sinar. A woman should wear a sinar, which we'll see in the Gemara what that is. Even though, I mean, the word sinar in general is a bib or a apron, but that's, in this case, I don't think that's what it means. V'shtei isha chofefet v'tovelet. That a woman should brush her hair, comb her hair out, and then do a tefillah. Shevo chlim achzirim b'ayirot, that the spice perfume sellers should be allowed to go around, sell door to door. V'tikein tefillah l'balei keri. And he also established that if someone's a balei keri, he has to go to the mikvah. Right, so now the Gemara is going to go through each one of these, discuss them. So the first one is sheikorim b'mincha b'shabbos. Alright, so why do you have to be korim b'mincha b'shabbos? Mishum yoshevei karanot. Because of the Yoshevei Karanot. Rashi says the Yoshevei Karanot are Yoshevei Chaniot Kol Yimot Achol. People who all week long are working, Oskim B'Tchora, Ben Korin B'Sheni V'Chamishi. They're so busy at work, they don't show up for the laning on Mondays and Thursdays. So therefore, Tiken B'Gunayu Kriya Yiteira. So for their sake, he created an additional laning. What exactly the reason for that additional laning is that just because they missed it on Monday, Thursday, I mean, they're going to hear it on Shabbos, they're going to hear the Parsha, it's not that they're going to miss it. So what it is, so either they learn more on Shabbos, because since they're working all week, they need to learn more on Shabbos, this was their Kriyas HaTorah, or...
It's a little weird, because they have Kriyas HaTorah a few hours early.
Right, they had it in the morning, or the other possibilities, if they're so used to being busy and not doing things, so you wanted to not have them in the afternoon also float away somewhere, so they established laning, so they would also learn on Shabbos afternoon.
Shabbos
right. Day, that's Moshe. Yeah, Kol Shabbos. Right. Shekorin b'sheni. Right now, that he would read on Mondays and Thursdays. Where it says Ezra tikein. Is that really true that Ezra is mitakein Mondays and Thursdays? V'amikara v'mitakno. Tell me about that. Was already there prior to Ezra. The Tanya v'yochul shloshah yomim b'midbar v'lo matu mayim. Right, they went in the midbar and they didn't find water. Dorshei rishumot amru. So those that are Doshe the mikraot, the psukim in mayim ela Torah. Right? So that way that Torah is nimshlo the mayim. Shnei mayim ela Torah. If they went to shelter yamim, but mivar lo matzu mayim, they didn't have Torah for 3 days. Shnemar ho'i kol tamei l'chul the mayim. Kevi chalchu shloshet yamim below Torah nil'u. Right? So once they went 3 days without Torah, they were finished. Amdu nevi'im shebneim b'tiknu lahem sheyikorim b'shabbat. So then they had a takana that they showed the nevi'im amongst them. Established. This is obviously right. This is the time when they left Mitzrayim. The Vim Shemam Sam, I assume, includes Moshe Rabbeinu. That they were Korim b'Shabbat. Umasukim b'Echor b'Shabbat. They read on Shabbat. Skip Sunday. Be Korim b'Sheni. Read again on Monday. Umasukim Shlishi b'Revi. Skip Tuesday, Wednesday. Be Korim b'Chamishi. Then you lay on Thursday. Umasukim erev Shabbat. Skip Friday. Kedesh. Oyelino gilu yamin below Torah. You won't go any 3 consecutive days without laying. When it says mitara tiknu chad gavra tvat psukei now mitvat gavra tvat psukei, the original tashana was either one aliyah with 3 psukim or 3 aliyot with 3 psukim. Kenei koanim levim israelim for a total of 3 psukim. Atahu, so Ezra comes along, tiken tvat gavra v'asara psukei. Says 3 aliyot with 10 psukim. Keneged asara batanim. Keneged asara batanim. The asara batanim is a concept mentioned in the Gemara Megillah. Rashi quotes it over here that Bnei Adam Ksherim, people that are Ksherim, Batlim Mimelachtan, Asuk B'Tarchei Tzibur, they give up their work to work for the Tzibur and be there on behalf of the Tzibur. And their additional thing was Lavok Kodmin LeBeit Knesset. They should come early to Beit Knesset and Mitzuim Asara LeEtz Tzfilah. So there will always be 10 there when Tzfilah starts. Umit Farnasim Mishal Tzibur, and they get paid, they get their salary out of the Tzibur. I'm not exactly sure what does it mean that they were there, had to be early there to make the minyan for the tefillah. The idea of a minyan is that there should be, you know, people would come to make the minyan. But I guess this is to ensure there was always a minyan there for tefillah. So these are Asara Batlanim. Now also, this idea of Monday and Thursday, Tosfos points out over here, It's important. Why out of those days did he pick Monday and Thursday? You could come up with other sequences that would have eliminated the problem of having 3 days without Torah. So why are Monday and Thursday chosen? So you have the Tosos right on the left here. Kadesh Elino Gimel Yemim Lo Torah. And tomorrow, Ma'ishna Shetiknu Chesheni V'Chamishi. Led to exceptional vows Monday and Thursday. If I was going to say that, I would say, they're coming. People are coming in anyway for the marketplace on Monday and Thursday. They're coming in to be done. So they're going to come into the ARO, they're coming to the main centers, and there'll be a big center. The lane also, they do the whole works on one day. But it says, no, there's something else. What's that? It's Omer Rishum Dharma Midrash. Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Shalom, Alav B'chamishi. When he went up on Rosh Chodesh Elul to get the Kulukot HaKoronot, that was a Thursday. V'yarad B'sheni. And then he came down on a Monday. I mean, the Yom Kippur was on a Monday that year. Came down on a Monday. V'nitrat Elo HaMakom. So the Kodesh Baruch was interrupted. The fish had an eight ratzon, but until Aliyah v'rida, because it was an eight ratzon, and that going up and coming down. Kapu v'sheni v'chamishi, they established the landing on Monday and Thursday. Ukach nami nagu ditanot, speak of the best behave. That's the same reason that, for instance, when we land for Bahab, and we have the fast of Bahab, it's not on Monday and Thursday, because Mondays and Thursdays are considered to be eight ratzon, because of the fact that Moshe, when he was nimchal. For the Lukot HaShniyot, Lukot HaChronot, when he went up for those last set of 40 days, it began on a Thursday, ended on a Monday. So for that reason, again, Rosh Chodesh Elul and Yom Kippur are days of Eitz Ratzon, and so is Monday and Thursday. So that's what drove it, and it's probably why we also say Long Tachnun on a Monday and Thursday, because also it's an Eitz Ratzon. I mean, that's the time of the Eitz Ratzon. So all these things then built up on Monday and Thursday. So it's down below, then goes through the actual calculation, because depends on whether you hold like a Yossi or a Baman in the Gemara Shabbos. I won't burden you with the calculations, but assuming that the Medrash is correct, that's the reason that Tosfos brings for leaning on Monday and Thursday. Alright, V'donim, so back into the Gemara, this is number 3 of Takanot Ezra. V'donim b'chein b'chamishi, they used to do a Pesnin and have the Nim on Monday and Thursday. The Shchichi, the Atul, the Mitra, B'Sifra, this is a very interesting reason. Because it was common for them to come to hear leaning. Since it was common for them to come here laning, they figure, once they're here already, we'll do also dinim on Monday and Thursday, right? So I would have thought, right, the other way. Yom HaShuk was, Monday and Thursday, so therefore they established a dinim and the Sefer Torah. But wait, the Gemara's reading, the way Tosfos reads is that Monday and Thursday laning came first. Because of that, right, then they placed the dinim on top of that. But once they were there for laning and the dinim, that's when the Yom HaShuk became, was Monday and Thursday. Almost came like the first of
Yom HaShuk was, I don't know about Monday, but for Thursday.
Okay, about Shabbos, right? So then we're gonna have a second about Shabbos right now. Shei mechabsim bechamishi b'Shabbat, that they should launder on Thursday. So now the Gemara says, why is that? Mishum kvod Shabbat. That's kvod Shabbat. Now what? How? I think you could look at that one of two ways. What is mishum kvod Shabbat? Because it depends. That's right. Oh, right. So it depends. Is it Thursday as opposed to Friday? So the takana was make sure you launder on Thursday, either so you don't run out of time on Friday, or so that doesn't burden you on Erev Shabbos. The takana was to do it on Thursday instead of Friday, or was the takana to do it at all? Meaning that they didn't always launder their clothing every week, but the takana was to do it every Thursday so that some people would have clean clothing for Shabbos. It could be one, either way, but again, that's Mishum Kvod Shabbos. And then what David said, hey, once you have Thursday Mikvod Shabbos, that would already also establish why there would be Yom HaShuk on Thursday, because right, that would help people for the preparations of Shabbos. Shuachlim Shum Be'erev Shabbat. Right, so the they should eat shum. They should eat garlic on Erev Shabbat. Mishum ona, because of ona. Why is that? Yechtiv asher piryo iten biito. So it gets its fruit in its time. What does that mean? Rabbi Yehuda b'item Rav Nachman b'item Rav Kana b'item Rabbi Yochanan. Ze amishamesh mitato mi Erev Shabbat Erev Shabbat. That's the ona. Talmid Chachamim is mi Erev Shabbat Erev Shabbat. So meaning Leil Shabbos Kodesh, right? Not Erev Shabbos meaning Friday, but Leil Shabbos Kodesh. So now, Tana Rabbanan, Chamisha Dvarim Nemru B'Shum. There are 5 things that are said about Shum, about garlic masbiah, meaning that it satisfies. U'mashchin. Mashchin, before we said from the word shchin, would be, that it creates boils and blisters, but Rashi says, mashchin is mechamim et aguf. It warms the body. Right? Matil panim.
Shchin itself also causes
a fever or warmth. Yeah. So maybe. U'matil panim. Face radiates. Umarbea zera, it increases the zera, which is the reason for eating it on Erev Shabbos. Vore kinim shibimei b'neayim. Right, so kinim would literally be lice, but I assume this means parasites in one's stomach. It kills the parasites. This is what it's known for, as an aphrodisiac, right? Which is that it increases one's love and removes the kina, removes the jealousy. Rashi says, "Machnis dava mitok shesameach et alei, mesameach et alei." Because shum has all these benefits to it, right? It makes the person happy, and that happiness makes them, you know, romantic or more in love. That's the thing, not that the shum itself necessarily causes the aphrodisiac effect, but that the fact that shum has all these positive qualities puts a person into a position or a condition where they will be in love and remove the kina'ah because they're satisfied. Alright, next is number 6. Ushite isha mashkimet vofa. That a woman should get up early and bake her bread early in the morning. This is an amazing takana. Kedei shite pat mitsuya
le'aniim.
It's unbelievable. No, that they should cook. They should bake early in the day so that once the aniim already come around in the morning, they'll be available. Not that they should be baking at that time, but it won't be ready for them. It's amazing takana. If the women have to get up extra early to bake and to ensure that the aniim have bread available to them when they are doing their circling in the morning. All right, number 7. Today, isha chugeret b'sinar. This is what we mentioned again, that the takana number 7 is mishum tzniuta. For tzniuta, Rashi says, lehit rachek min aveira. What it sounds like from Rashi is that it's like a chastity belt, right? That in Rashi above, when he said sinar, he called them michnasayim ktanim, like some sort of shorts, or some sort of item that makes it harder for the woman to perform an aveira, some sort of dissuasion or something that would slow her down. So it's equivalent to what would be a chastity belt of sorts to prevent or to delay or dissuade women from doing an aveira. Alright, number 8. That she has to comb out her hair, brush her hair before she is tovel. So the takana, of course, Rabbeinu Tam mentions, is only the rosh, meaning that the chofefet is only on a head, that one has to comb out the hair and make sure that there are no chatzitzot in the hair. Then the Gemara says, wait a minute, right? What are you talking about? Chatzitza is a din del raisayim, right? That's a din from the Torah. The flesh in the water, nothing else between you and the water. There's nothing in between. You have to get rid of all chatzitzot. Et b'saro, et atafelo b'saro. So when it says et b'saro, means that anything that is a subset of your body, that is included. Right? The seyar is not a seyar as long as it's attached. Is not a chatzitza. If it's detached, right, then it will be a chatzitza. So Imre, del raisa liune minotaur, all you have to do is check your hair. Dilma miktar, it may be there's mass in the hair, which will cause a chatzitza. Inami ma'us mide mishum chatzitza, right? So you have to check if there's something disgusting, something dirty in the hair, or there's knots in the hair, that would cause a chatzitza. That's only din del raisa. You don't have to do anything besides check. And he came along and he said, no, not only do you have to check, but you actually have to comb out the hair. You have to do, literally, you have to do actually combing to ensure that there are no chatzitza. So, that's a karkoka. That's what the takana was, to prevent the problem of checking or bad checking. He just said, comb it out, because then you'll know. You bump into the stuff that's sticky, or you bump into the things that are knotted. That will make sure that there are no chatzitzot. There are no chatzitzot that are there before she goes into the mikvah. Right, number 9, she rochlim achzirin ba'ayirot. Rochlim, these sellers, peddlers, should be able to go around the city. That the fact that they're allowed to go around the city, Rashi says earlier that they're not allowed to object. The people, the Bnei Ayir, are not allowed to object that they are selling door to door these items. Why? Shum tachshite nashim. That's for the tachshite nashim. Now, I don't know tachshite nashim. I don't know if this is in the broader sense, tachshite nashim, because it's perfumes and spices. Or tachshite nashim literally means he was selling jewelry, meaning that the Rochlim was selling jewelry. Although generally, Rochel is used as a term for a perfumer or spice seller. Right? Kadesh lo yizganu al balehem. So again, that the Benot Yisrael should be beautiful, right, and that they should be... I would say great. I would say perfume, except that the Lashon HaGemara, Tachshitei, generally Tachshitei Nashim is a term that's used for jewelry or adornment, right? So I say you could use it as a broader term. Tachshitei Nashim could include perfume.
Yeah,
makes them beautiful. Right. I agree that could be the case. Or it could be that here the Dr. Baruch Klim are also talking about they go to selling earrings and all these beautiful things here. Okay, number 10. Retikein tvila the Valkyrian, right? So that you have to have a tvila if you are a Valkyrie of a similar mission. That's all right, so what do you mean? That's a clear pasuk from the Torah. Dichtiv ish kititem menu shechvadera v'chatzim tzero v'mai. Person has a similar mission, has to go to the mikvah and become tahor. What type of takana is this mezra? If you already mean a Torah, you have to do this. The right, the whole chuma of a kodashim. Hey, when are you talking about the right, so that's a din in tuma. A din in tuma, what does tuma prevent you from doing? It prevents you from eating chuma, prevents you from eating kodashim. There you go to the mikvah in order to eat chuma, in order to eat kodashim. But other than that, you don't need it. Adu, tikena feel is different Torah. The Ezra went on and was made the additional takana is in order to learn, right? One must go to the mikvah, right, so that they will not be a Baal Keri. Right, so Divrei Torah says, Lo Yishaneh Hashiz Bo. A person cannot learn until they go to the mikvah. The Gemara in Brachot, the Mishnah in Brachot discusses this. But a person is a Baal Keri, what he can say, a Kriyat Shema, what a Birkas Kriyat Shema he can say. There the Gemara in Brachot says, right, that the Takana of Ezra did not hold. That Takana of Ezra was dropped, did not hold, right? Why? Either because it's Lo Nifashet Kulo, that the Lo Pashet Yisro, that it didn't extend, people did not accept it, it was not widely accepted, the Takana of Ezra, or that it was a Dvar She Tzibor Eini Yechol La'amod Bo, that's something that the Tzibor couldn't hold by, couldn't continue to do it. So now, Tosfos says over here, right, this Takana of Ezra, Tosfos says, Lo Kaimu L'Anochi, we don't pass them like this Takana of Ezra, Elo Kedei Rabbi Yehuda B'Metera, Damrei Divrei Torah Im Kabbalim Tumah. The basic principle is Divrei Torah, not Mekabalim Tumah, because we are Ke'ish. They're Nimshal Ke'ish, they're like fire. And fire is not Mekabal Tumah. Fire is the consuming, right? Then it doesn't Mekabal, it's not Mekabal Tumah. And therefore, Divrei Torah are not affected by Tumah and Tahara. So that, if that's the case, so that's the question. He says, listen, who's Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira? And there's Ezra. If you had a choice between Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira and Ezra, who are you fasting like? You're fasting like Ezra. Where did Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira have a right to come and uproot the Takana of Ezra? How can he do that? So Tosfos gives two answers here. He says, one, well, this is a couple answers. One is, V'yesh l'amar dilmas sabra lo tikken Ezra davar zeh. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira's position was that this was not a Takana of Ezra. That he didn't believe it was a Takana of Ezra, and that's why he was able to uproot it. The other possibility is, he says that Ezra himself placed an out in the Takana. When he made the Takana, he says, if the future generations see a need to remove this Takana, then I'm building in, right, the ability to undo the takana, to get permission to undo it. Right, the last possibility which Tosfos brings is that lo pashet yisro b'rov Yisrael, that it never expanded. I mean, the takana never took hold. Since the takana never took hold, it's really that the fact that Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira disagrees is not a problem because the takana doesn't take hold. It's not really a takana. And we say that in other places that takanos that didn't take hold, right, and they are not classified or qualified as takanot. Now that is true when it comes to in general, if takanot don't take hold, then they're not classified as a takana. On the other hand, if a Navi says something, a Navi does not have to have it take hold in order for it to be a takanat Naviin. The difference, or the idea over here, is that Ezra, this is never found in the Ketuvim. In this takana of Ezra is not mufrash in any Naviim or any Ketuvim that involve Ezra. Therefore, Ezra can't be metakin in it even without the taking hold. And since it did not take hold, therefore it would not be a takana that you cannot uproot.
Yeah, because all the other takanot, there was Ezra not taken.
But those took hold. So those took hold.
But because they're pushing that they don't go accordingly.
No, but that's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah deals with this, your question. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah is talking about the takanas of Tem Yena, Shemen, Chalav. And they said that certain of them took hold. Shemin did not take hold. It was something that the people were not willing to accept. Now, in general, when they established these takanot, did not explain the reason so that it would be nisfashet. And only afterwards did they explain the reason so that people wouldn't have questions, but only have later on, but they understand the reason, but not use that as a excuse not to do the takana. So, but obviously we're talking about a period of time where the chachamim, people like Ezra, had tremendous influence over the Am. Right? As we see from the stories, when he comes up to Yerushalayim and he finds them intermarried and he speaks to the people and the people are ready to divorce their wives, get rid of their families. I mean, we're talking about a period of time where Ezra had tremendous koach to establish things over the people. And the fact that it was not nispashet is a signal that it was something that the tzibur wasn't able or willing to accept. Alright.
You have a similar question, I think, earlier in the morning. You have two takanas in a row. The first one says Ezra's Mutake and the Shabbos afternoon because people missed them on Thursdays. Right. And the next one says he was talking Mondays and Thursdays. So he's talking Mondays and Thursdays.
Oh, so the Gemara said in the end that it wasn't, that he was not talking Mondays and Thursdays. That's the whole thing. In the end, if Mondays and Thursdays preceded him, then he saw that some, after the Sakana was already in place, that then there were problems with this Monday and Thursday, so he added the Mincha laning as well. So that wasn't something that, where the Sakana failed, the Sakana probably took hold originally and wasn't a problem. In the Midbar, they already had that Sakana. Alright, next. The next count of 10 things were said about Yerushalayim. Ein abayit chalut ba, this is about a sale of a house, generally a sale of a house in a ir chuma. After 1 year of the sale, if it's not redeemed, it becomes a permanent sale. That is not true in Yerushalayim. And you can redeem it forever or in the Ovelet returns. Ein amiviyai glarufa, the city of Yerushalayim itself never brings an glarufa. If there's a mate that's found for over the year, they don't bring an glarufa. It can never become a ir anidachat. Right, that it doesn't have batei negaim inside of it. You can't have either these protrusions from the walls into the Reshut Rabim or overhangs, balconies in the streets of Yerushalayim. You don't make garbage dumps in Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to fire up the urns, right, to create seeds or to either to make pottery or lime. You're not allowed to have gardens and orchards there. Excluded from that are the rose gardens that were there from the times of the Nevi'im Rishonim. You can't bring up chickens in that area. You're not allowed to leave the mate overnight inside of Yerushalayim. So now Gemara is going to go through each one of these. That there's no permanent sale in Yerushalayim is the statement. It doesn't qualify to be classified as a batei arei chuma. That what? These aren't takanot. These are principles of Yerushalayim. So these were from the beginning. This is the position of what the story of Yerushalayim is. Dichtiv, we'll see in a second why. Dichtiv, v'kam abayta shelo chuma litzmitut l'kone oto l'dorotav. Right, so it says that the bayit will go permanently to the buyer forever. V'kasavar lo nitchalka Yerushalayim l'shvatim. That's the machlokas in Gemara Yoma and Daf Yudbet. Whether Yerushalayim was actually nitchalka l'shvatim or lo nitchalka l'shvatim. Is Yerushalayim, quote unquote, the, I would call it an international city, but a national city, right, and therefore there's no ownership of the Shvatim inside of it? Or is Yerushalayim Nitzchalka l'Shvatim, meaning that it belongs, it was in Shevet Binyamin and partly in Yehuda? That was the borderline between Yehuda and Binyamin. And on that, it was Nitzchalka l'Shvatim, right, that it was divided amongst the Shvatim, and therefore it had all the dinim of any other regular city. So here, where it says, Nitzchalka l'Shvatim, therefore it does not qualify as that it doesn't have the sin of property and property ownership.
What
do you
mean that it was partially
that partially the name of the transcript that would apply? According to the other religion. Yeah, it sounds like in the Shvatim, then we have a dinner like. You can see that with all these principles here. Seems like that the principle of Loni Tzchalka Shvatim is what's driving the dinim over here. It says, "Eino mevi'ay l'grov v'hag d'chtiv ki matzeh chalal ba'adamah asher Hashem l'kachan otein l'cha l'rishta." So again, the rishta implies that it's Yerusha, that it was given over, it was there, v'yushalayim lo nitzchalka l'shvatim. Again, implying that if it wasn't nitzchalka l'shvatim, it would qualify as the rishta. So therefore you don't bring egla rufa. V'en an asit ir nidakha, they can't become an ir nidakha, d'chtiv arecha. Right? When it says about ir nidakha, it's your cities, the implication of your cities is something that belongs to you. Shlaim lo nitzchalka l'shvatim. Again, Shlaim was not divided up to the shvatim. Ve'ena mitam'ah b'negayim, d'chtiv v'natati neged tzarat v'beit eretz achuzat chem. Again, it's eretz achuzat chem. Achuzah is the implication that you own or was given or distributed to you. Shlaim lo nitzchalka l'shvatim. Again, Shlaim wasn't divided up. Ve'en matzim v'azizim guzutarot. Alright, now we move over to a different time. It's number 5. You can't have these protrusions into Reshut Rabim or these overhangs. Mifnel ohel hatum'ah. Right, so that you won't have this problem of ahil alatumah, that tons of people are going through here. And if you end up having these overhangs into the Reshut Rabim, then you have a problem that any tumah passes under them will have also be mahil. Right? It'll be mahil on others or people there if there's tumah found under them. So we want to prevent this problem of tumah's ohel inside of Yerushalayim. So we say, don't have any of these overhangs, don't have any of these protrusions. And also that the Olei Regalim will not be hurt by this. Again, whether the hurt to the Olei Regalim is a physical hurt, that things are protruding thin and it's tight, when the Olei Regalim come up and it's a very tight space, and therefore it's that's the issue here. Or is the problem that the Chazaku Olei Regalim is from the Tumah? All the Olei Regalim are there, they end up, again, if it's tight space, they end up under these protrusions, and they're going to have problems of Tumah that is going to spread because of the Ohel that is established over here. You don't make garbage dumps or garbage piles inside Yerushalayim. Mishum shkatzim, because we're worried about the shkatzim that are playing around in there, or the shkatzim that end up over there, since they grow in those areas and they bring around tumah because they die there, and then they're going to be mitameh the kodashim. So we don't want to invite shkatzim to be there that can cause tumah in Yerushalayim. Ve'enosim b'kibshonot, we don't make these fires like these kilns in Yerushalayim, mishum kutra, because of the smoke. Right? Rashi says the smoke is a problem. Ashan shemashchir techumah v'gnayu. It blackens the walls, and that is inappropriate. Which walls Rashi is referring to is unclear. I don't know if he means the walls of the city, and therefore it's inappropriate because you want Yerushalayim supposed to be hadar v'tiferet, right? So therefore, blackening the walls of the city is problematic. Or it says the kutra is talking about maybe even the mikdash or harabayit, which is high up in the city. If you have smoke that's rising up in the city, that will affect the walls of harabayit or the mikdash. Either way, it's something that would not leave Yerushalayim in the most beautiful state, and therefore we don't allow the smoke or the in Yerushalayim. Also, might be for the Olei Regalim that it'd be uncomfortable. We don't want smoke in Yerushalayim in general because it's supposed to be a place that people can come and feel comfortable. Ve'enasim v'ginotu pardesim. This is to me the most amazing one. You can't have gardens and orchards in Yerushalayim, something that you'd always say, I think it's beautiful, it's nice to have a garden. What's the problem? Mishum sircha. Problem of sirchon, sircha, rotting. So what's the problem of rotting? Rashi brings one of two possibilities about the rotting. Is that when you weed the fields, when you weed your fields or your orchards, you throw all the weeds out into the street, and they lay there and they rot. So that's the one possibility. The other possibility is you have to fertilize the fields. When you fertilize the fields, whether it's so fine, the orchards and the fields are beautiful smelling, but the fertilizer that's put on there is an unpleasant smell, and that would make it unpleasant inside of Yerushalayim.
There was a whole issue of making a public garden
for the old city. Oh, because of this. Okay, number 9 is Ein Magadlim Ba'Tanim. This is a takana that we saw earlier. By a person shouldn't bring up chickens. Mishum Kodoshim. Because they're afraid the chickens would go into the garbage and peck away the garbage, they pick out tum'ah from the garbage, and they're going to bring it back into the yeshuv, into the area, and they're going to cause tum'ah to spread through the kodeshim. Number 10 is Amy leaning by some mate. You're not allowed to leave a mate overnight. Gemara. What does that mean? Gemara. Rashi says, Mesorah tibi adenu, but ain't tam lo davar. There's no reason for it that's given, but rather it's a Mesorah tibi adenu that we don't leave a mate overnight inside of Yerushalayim. That was many times what they had to do when they had the problems of sieges on Yerushalayim. They used to send the bodies out, right? They used to take the bodies and put them outside, roll them out of the walls, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai also, when he feigned dying, right, and being dead, that if Talmidim want to take him out of Yerushalayim, they have permission from the Bar Yonim to take him out, is because you're not melim et hameis be Yerushalayim. Right? This principle is you don't leave the mace overnight in Yerushalayim.
It's interesting that they just take him around, and they give explicit reasons relating to Tumah for this previous thing.
Right, it should be right. The problem of tumah, the problem of the kedushat ha'ir versus the tumah. I mean, generally we say that there are elevations of kedushah with ourselves, the Mishnah and Kalim, right? So that batei arei choma are more kadosh me regular ayirot because, for instance, people who are afflicted with the gaim may not stay in a batei arei choma. Then beyond that, Yerushalayim is more kadosh than batei arei choma. So you could have made the claim, right? The possibility is that Yerushalayim, the Kedushat Yerushalayim is what prevents you from allowing a mate to be right there overnight, versus the fact that Gemara, that it was just a Mesorah, Ein Tam Badavak. Right? The Mesorah Seshav quotes here that there's a reason brought in the Zohar and Naso. I didn't have an opportunity to look it up, but the Zohar and Naso brings down some reason why you can't be Melina the mate. I don't know if he does say that, but I think there could be some clash between the Kedushat Yerushalayim and the Tumata mate that we're talking about. Alright, Ein Megadlin Chazirim B'chol Makom. So now we're back to our Mishnah. Right, we finally got back around to our Mishnah, which is that you can't bring up Chazirim, you can't bring up pigs in any place. Why is this? Tara Banan, Tishitzaru Beit Chashmonai Zel Zeh, when the Beit Chashmonai had the civil war. This is the time, Ayahuqunus Mimifnim, Aristobus Mimachut. Right, actually, there's two other times in the Gemara where this story is brought down. It's actually reversed there, where it says, Aristobus Mimifnim, Aristobus Mimachut. But anyway, this is the Chashmonai dynasty, after the time of the victory of the Chashmonim in Chanukah time, they had kings along the way, and then finally came down to where there were two brothers, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, who were fighting over who should take over the Malchus. They started a civil war, and in order to end the civil war, to deal with the civil war, they end up bringing in the Romans, which begins the process of the destruction of Yerushalayim, because they bring in the Romans, and then Herod goes ahead and kills all the Beit Kashmon Da'im, right, and takes over and becomes the king. So he is a Roman appointee, a Roman a slave of the, or was a slave in the Beit Kashmon Da'im, and he becomes the king, and that leads to Rome finally coming and destroying the Mikdash. So b'chol yom ayu mishashen lahem b'kupat dinarim. So every day they used to lower down a bucket full of money. Vayu mavim lahem tmidim. They used to bring them the carbonos tmidim. So in order to allow the service in the Mikdash to go on, right, they permitted this exchange each day so that the animals would be raised up and the money came out, although they were sieging on Yerushalayim. Nice idea. Despite their differences, they knew that the service of the Mikdash is important, so they allowed the service of the Mikdash to continue despite the fact that they were sieging on Yerushalayim. President Nunu, Chachmat Yivanit, which is the, let's see that tomorrow's daf. But what is Chachmat Yivanit exactly? But if you remember from the Gemara in Sotah, with the last daf in Sotah, the last one or two daf in Sotah, that Chachmat Yivanit was this aristocratic language that they, certainly the Greeks used to use, that worked with simanim and signals and all sorts of, private language. If this guy knew Chachmat Yivanit, as long as they're able to bring the carbonos to Mikdash, you guys aren't going to conquer Yerushalayim. They put down the money. They put up a pig instead. Once the pig reads up halfway up there, not deeper enough, it was stubborn. It planted its nails into the wall. An earthquake, whatever happened, shook 400 amos by 400 amos, right? But obviously guzma, but the idea that this was considered to be out of bounds, right? Totally out of bounds, an unnecessary, right, skia in the avodat hamikdash, especially that they use the chazir, right, instead of any other animal, which, again, if you look in the Marfashim here, they talk about why it's a chazir and what does it represent, and the fact that it would stop halfway up the wall, all these ideas. Because of this maaser, it said, right, be cursed anyone who brings up chazirim, anyone who brings up pigs. And be cursed is the one, anyone who teaches his children chachma yivanit, because the one who gave the advice here had known chachma yivanit. Gemara says some correlation between chachma yivanit and this bad advice, someone who's giving improper advice. On that time period when there was a siege laid on Yerushalayim, so that the army around it had basically destroyed everything around Jerusalem, it was a scorched earth policy. Instead of the Omer coming from somewhere close to Jerusalem, it came all the way out from Ginota Tzrifim, which they allowed me because in Socher. So these two places were much further out from Jerusalem, were considered, right, very, very unusual that they would bring the Karbanot, Alechem, Shtei Alechem, and the Omer from such distances away from Jerusalem, because always there was stuff much closer to Jerusalem. But because of the siege around Jerusalem, they destroyed all that was around Yerushalayim. Tosfos over here points out a couple of things. One is, there's a general principle, which is that you're not allowed to traffic in Isur. You know, a person cannot make his livelihood from trafficking in Dvarim Asurim. So if that's the case, why do you need a specific takana that a person cannot bring up Chazirim? If he's bringing up Chazirim, that means that he is trafficking in things that are not kosher. Things that are not, for instance, nevelo, trefot, all these things you're not allowed. So even though they're a mutar bahana, what? No, this is for Jews. Even for goyim, you are not. This cannot be your panasa. Panasa cannot be to traffic in these types of items. Questions come up, for instance, in the issues of a person can a person own a McDonald's? If everybody opens like a company like a McDonald's, it also came up. Can a person own stock in McDonald's? What does that mean in terms of their ownership of such a company that traffics or does chora? Right, in Trifos, Nevelos, is that permitted? There are questions that come up because of this. But, what do you need a specific takana, right, Gabe Chazirim, if there's already a restriction of trafficking in Chazirim? So it says differentiate. So Rabbeinu Tam says that Dabka was Avar Omeid Achila, that the Isur of trafficking in an item is the only items that are Omeid Achila. Aval in the Gadlam, the Shoach Oroz, Bishumnan, or the Machran, the Yitzroshim, Ashaykh Bahem, Shari, Chol Chedid Mutar Limkor, you can sell fat. You can be involved in things that echidlo kaila chila, right? So that things that are what?
You own a zoo.
But then you're not trafficking. I think that's not that's less of it. That's not trafficking in those items. I think those are trafficking means that you're really doing skora, you're moving back, you're buying and selling them.
So you have a glue factory and you're buying and selling horses.
Right, so that type of thing. If you're using bones for the glue or for fats that you're using for candles, that is permitted according to this. So that the additional takana can exist even for non-food items, because the irim are restricted. So that's the restriction over here. Is an additional restriction that is above and beyond the schora issue. That's number one. Number two is that you're not allowed to teach your son chokmah yivanit. He says the Gemara in Sotah says that was in Pumus Shul Titus. That happened in the time of Titus. Pumus Shul Titus is, right, what is that? That's when Titus came to destroy the Mikdash, which, as the Tosafot points out, much later than Bnei Chashmonaim. And Chashmonaim is what Pumas is, the armies or the groups of Titus. It basically means the legions of Titus that came to destroy the Mikdash. So if you're talking about the legions of Titus that established this takana, excuse me, how can you be talking about a story between Aristobulus and, right, Hyrcanus over here? That's Bnei Chashmonaim. And Tosafot says that the amount of time, the spread of time between Titus and the Bnei Chashmonaim is too wide to have it be in the same time. Rashi, you should know, there's a Rashi at the end of Sotah, very difficult Rashi. Tosafot jumps and mentions over here. But Rashi, Tosafot doesn't mention it, but Tosafot deals with this issue over here. But Rashi and Sotah says that Pumus Shul Titus happened by Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. Rashi says that Titus happened at that time, which is an unbelievable statement. I mean, historically, it's just impossible that Titus saw Aristobulus and Hyrcanus. Right, so there, either they deal, the Marsha has a nice shot for Rashi, and he said that it started. The civil war of Hyrcanus and Aristobulus is what brought Titus in the end. That's what brought it. That's how he explains Rashi. There are those that say that Titus, there were two types, there was a different Titus that existed at the time of Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. Again, that's still difficult because it's pretty clear that Gemara, when he's talking about Pumas Shul Titus, talking about the destruction of the Mikdash. Tosafot deals with this issue over here and saying, either the original Gezerah was not Nitzkabel, there was a Gezerah at the time of Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, it was not accepted, and then again it's the Pumas Titus, then it was accepted. So there's two Gezerahs, one was accepted, one was not. Or the other possibility is that the original was Boto Shah Arur, said it was Arur. Right? So that, when you say that it would be Arur, cursed is the one who teaches his child, but to make it into a Zeiran, that you'd be calling a Baryan, because it was a Takana de Rabbanan, that only happened in the time of Titus. So they strengthened the Takana of Zeiran, and Pumas and Titus to make it into a firm Zeiran, not just an Arur. That's how it extended or changed, changed in time. What else is it? Otosha'a. Matzah Shabbat. So Tosafot also mentions here, the Gemara Menachot talks about this Matzah Shabbat. The Gemara Menachot sounds like Mordechai was the one that happened in the time of Mordechai. So again, Tosafot says historically Mordechai never saw Aristobulus and Hyrcanus. So what he's talking about, that was Mordechai. Tosafot comes out with an unbelievable statement here. He says, in here the read, the Chol Otan Shayu Bikim B'Ramadzim of Lashonot, anybody who knew these signs and this type of communication and languages, I knew Kareem Hashem Mordechai. Again, it became a Lashon Mush'al. Like we've talked about a lot of these times, Lashon Mush'al. The term Mordechai then came to represent anybody who knew, I don't know, Tachsisei HaMelech, who was involved in politics, who knew how to deal with government issues. They were called Mordechai because of Mordechai's position at the end of the Megillah, where he got involved in these items. Right? I knew Kareem Hashem Mordechai. B'shoya Rosh V'chacham Lakir. He knew all that. He was the one who knew, who was involved in all these items. Well, Thomas said, all right, over there, he thought that other things are thought was more
important. Well,
Shibim Lishanot, because he's part of Sanhedrin, right? That's the Gemara says over there. That was the name of Sanhedrin. I think that's the Teresh. But again, this idea that Mordechai became a Lashon Mushal, right? So it's what?
Yeah.
And anybody's involved, you want to call somebody involved in politics, Tom Chalvam gets involved in politics, you call him Mordechai. Have a good Shabbat.